We acknowledge the people of Ngāi-Tahu Iwi of Te Wai Pōnamu, Aotearoa, who welcomed Alone Australia onto their land. And we acknowledge the Cammeraygal people as the traditional owners of the land we're recording on. We pay deepest respect to First Nations elders, past and present, and all First Nations people.
Welcome to Alone Australia, the podcast. My name is Darren Mara.
Okay, you got your newsreader voice on. I love it. I'm Gina Chick. Darren and I are watching the show with you each week, and we're digging down into everything that happens. We're going to chat with Susan later in the episode and my dear friend Kate from season one of Alone Australia. But first, let's talk about episode 7.
There is a storm a-blowing in New Zealand. It's given us a pretty good opportunity to examine a bit more closely the shelters that the participants have got going. Notably, you've got like Tamika, who's got an awesome shelter, Andreas too, and Christoph. And then you've got Rick, who looks like he's just under a tarp. Who do you think's best set up for dealing with this bad weather that's on the way?
I've got to say, I'm a little surprised that Rick doesn't have a more substantial shelter.
I was shocked when I saw it. I was like, oh my God, I could do that.
And I get that he wants to be minimal impact, and probably as well, you know, maybe his survival, you know, where he has been surviving. A lot of Australia's climate is quite temperate and you can get away with just a tarp. However, for these weather conditions, I would want walls. I don't have much hope for how Rick's going to hold out in this storm.
It looks like he's going to get saturated.
Yeah. I was shouting at the TV going, no, Rick, what's going on? Build some walls.
Yeah, for an SAS man.
Yeah. Well, there's obviously a reason for that as well. But also I wonder if Starvation Brain is playing in there. We're over 3 weeks into the competition and there's been very little in the way of calories for most of them. So Starvation Brain is not to be overlooked. And when we're in Starvation Brain, our brain doesn't have the fuel it needs and our decision-making process can get quite affected. We can also get really focus locked on one thing and miss a whole bunch of other stuff. So I wonder if that's what's going on a bit for Rick.
Fishing was a big part of this episode. Rick fashioned a funny little floating mouse. I didn't know that. Trout ate mice. I had no idea mice even swam. Christoph made a little timber catamaran and Tamika had great luck out on her little fishing ledge. Mm. What are your thoughts on their different tactics?
What we're seeing is everyone's having to get creative. You know, the thing with trout is when they're breeding, they don't feed. And in winter, they breed. I'm pretty sure the New Zealand trout are, you know, the same as the Aussie ones like this. So the competition is always geared so that, you know, it's not going to be easy for people to get food because otherwise, let's face it, they'd all be there for a year. What we're seeing is now people going, okay, there are fish, but what do I need to do to be able to catch them? And there's some pretty fabulous and slightly kooky solutions coming along. I love Christoph's first boat, his first fishing boat.
Even I knew. I was like, that's not going to work, man. Come on. Put an outrigger or something.
Well, the beautiful thing was he's made this boat. It was like a toy boat. And I was like, the part in me that used to love making toy boats and chucking them in the water was like, oh, that looks fabulous. But then he just like threw it in and it turned upside down. But I love that he then went away and went, let's have a think about this and came up with the outriggers. And when you look in the background of all of these shots, now you're starting to see what people have created that we haven't actually seen yet on the show because there isn't time to show a lot of the things that people are building. So there's some great seats, there's fishing rods, there's all sorts of stuff in the background. And it looks like Christoph's quite handy. Mm. So, I want to see how his outrigger does.
Yeah, yeah. The revised boat, for lack of a better term, looked actually like it floated, caught an eel.
Yeah. Yes, well, it caught the eel. Let's see if it can catch a fish. The floating mouse. I'm like, okay, maybe a mouse fell in and started swimming. It's creative.
It to be fair, it looked like it really looked like
a mouse. It did look like a mouse. Yeah. Yeah, I agree. And then, of course, we've got Tamika, who has caught 4 trout pretty much in 4 days. And they're stonkers, to use the Alone Australia Season 2 word of the season. They're stonkers. So Tamika is really well set up. And I've got to say, she's my pick.
She's really firming, isn't she?
She's my pick. Now that she's got food, my thing with her is, oh, vegetarian, not going to eat protein. But now that she's eating protein and fat, I reckon she's my dark horse.
So just quickly on the fish that Tomika has caught, to my like amateur brain, I'm like, okay, she's got four now and she's got two back-to-back, I think. Why not just eat it all there and then? Consume as much of the fish as you can. What's the benefit in preserving it and rationing it out?
It's a really good question. There is absolutely something to be said for when there's food, eat it, to carry it on your body. Like the replenishment that comes when we eat like a good amount of food, there's something that happens in our bodies with that, which is really useful. However, for our state of mind, when you know that I've got food tomorrow and tomorrow and tomorrow, then there's something, you saw it with Tomika when she suddenly got emotional and it hit her. It's like, oh, I have stored food. Because you have to remember that for wild things, like all wild animals, and for the 350,000 odd years that humans have been Homo sapiens, living in small bands, moving across the landscape, it's only the last 10, 12,000 years we haven't been doing that. Everything about us has evolved around one tenet, which is conservation of energy. Every calorie I burn is a calorie that I have to replace, and by replacing it, I am going to risk my life. As we see in that storm, like if you had to go out and hunt food in that, then you can't. But if you're starving, you need to. But someone like Tomika is like, well, I mean, this storm can run for another 5 days and I've got food. Once you start storing calories, something happens inside where we feel safe, we feel secure, we have that food security, and that state of mind can then move through like everything we do. The cons of that, we saw in one of the seasons in the Northern Hemisphere where one of the participants was hoarding food and not eating it, and he was literally in like proper starvation. But when they pulled him out, he's like, but I've got all of this food. So there's a balance.
Quickly, is she doing the right thing? Is she going about preserving it the right way, smoking it, drying it?
Absolutely. Like she's got bomber skills. Yeah. Looking at the inside of her wizard house, that fireplace she's got, because it's a very long fireplace, but it's all enclosed, that whole thing is a heater. So those stones are all going to heat up, and they're giving her heat, which is preserving her warmth, which is preserving calories. The way she's rigged things up so that they're drying with that fish, like she said, if it's dripping, it's cooking too fast. She obviously knows what she's doing.
It's giving her heat. It's giving her nourishment. It's also giving her great vibes.
Yeah.
She's in a great mental space by the end of this episode. By contrast, we've seen Rick express a lot of frustrations as he's trying to untangle his fishing line. We've seen some negative emotions coming from Andreas. Does that kind of negative talk spur you on when you're in that situation, or is it doing you more damage?
That's a hard one for me because I don't really have negative talk, so I can't speak so much from experience, and that's just the way I'm hardwired. But from what I see and what I know of sort of human psychology, wherever we are, we tend to feel like this is going to be forever. So if life is great and everything's doing well, I kind of think, oh, like I'm on a roll, this is amazing. If things are going badly and I'm in a bad space, there's a part of me that feels like this will be forever. And so we see momentum wherever we are, which is why people go into a downward spiral. When you've got starvation, when you've got the setting of goals and outcome-based movements, so I need to catch a fish or I need to have a success here, as soon as we set up an expectation of success, when we don't get that success, now we're giving ourselves a failure. If we don't have any expectations, then it works, it doesn't, no big deal. But when you've got a mindset where this is my goal, this is what I need to achieve, I didn't achieve it, now what we tend to do is beat ourselves up. And when that happens, it can cascade into more of the hamsters, more of the negative self-talk, and then we can make more mistakes. And we saw that with Rick. You know, he was in one of those like negative sort of spirals, and then he spilled his soup, put out his fire, and lost his soup.
Yeah.
And basically, if you then catch a fish. You see this across the board in Alone. You can have people and they're just in the worst place. They get one bit of food and suddenly it's like, it's fantastic. Life is fabulous. I'm having a great time.
It's a roller coaster. That's what we saw from Andreas, really. I mean, he was spiraling. Nothing that he was doing was working. And all of a sudden, late at night, he gets a fish and he's sort of back on top again.
Yeah.
That's a mighty roller coaster to be riding day in, day out.
Absolutely. And I think what we see in this particular, the experiment of Alone, is that the physical skills only get you so far. You know, can I make fire? Can I, you know, make a shelter? All of those things are important. But as Mark Matheson said when he came in, that people then run into the bit that they didn't think about, which is how am I with my emotions? And if there aren't tools for that emotional process, then those become the storms, much more than the physical storms. Those become the storms that can knock us out.
Mm. A subplot to this episode was that we learned that Susan is a breast cancer survivor. And from the sounds of it, came really quite close to losing her life. Does that make you view her differently in the show?
Yeah, absolutely. I think that the thing with life is none of us get out of it alive. And life is going to slap every single one of us at some point. And we all come face to face with our mortality in some way, or we get, incredibly challenged. When someone has been tempered by that, there's a proving that happens. We don't know how we're going to respond in those circumstances until we're there. We can have this idea, I'm going to be like this, but it's not until you've got your face pressed up against the glass that you really discover, you know, where your resilience is, where your mindset is, where your problem solving is. And for Susan to have gone through a double mastectomy and have gone through, you know, two recurrences and everything that she shared, for her to still be here, says so much, because otherwise she wouldn't be here. So obviously she found in the depths of that experience something to goad her through, and that is something that she then takes with her for the rest of her life.
Well, we'll be delving a bit more deeply into Susan's story when we speak to her in this podcast later on.
Can't wait.
Susan is somebody who is very connected to the land on which she lives, and we've been so interested in following her story up until now in season two, including that absolutely horrid gastro. But this episode especially dealt with some really significant emotional revelations in Susan's life. Susan, thank you so much for joining us. Let's start top level. Like, what was your survival skill set coming into Alone?
My survival skill set coming into Alone was very broad, foraging being my very strong suit, as is shelter building. Hunting was also part of my skill set, not as strong as my foraging, but definitely there. Yeah, and fire was a strong one too, but we haven't seen that yet.
We haven't seen you making fire yet?
We haven't seen the end result of me making fire. It was very much a strategy of mine to only make fire when I needed to cook. My shelter, my immediate shelter, was my clothing and my sleeping bag. So I was very warm inside my shelter and I didn't need fire. And I felt that gathering the kindling for the fire was really going to take a lot of energy and the wood for the fire. So
was the wood in Aotearoa completely sodden? I know in Lutruwita I could pick up a stick and I could squeeze it and water would come out. And watching, it looks like it's the same kind of wetness. Was that the case?
Yeah. I think the South Island of New Zealand is actually significantly wetter than Lutruwita. It was saturated and I did find some really dry, punky wood inside the tree where I found that fossilised possum.
That's not something you see every day.
So coming into Alone, what sort of adventures had you been on and what kind of experience on the land did you bring?
My most significant hunting and gathering adventure was a four-month sea kayak journey up the Coral Sea in a double sea kayak with John, and we did probably 70% of our food came from foraging and from the sea. We took a little bit of carbohydrate with us. And the sort of crucial thing in that environment was finding fresh water. So I've drunk wild water for over 30 years and found it to be really good for my system. So another strategy going into alone for me was not to boil my water, because I've had such good experience with clean water all over Australia.
Do you reckon that your gastro had something to do with the unboiled water?
I actually know that the gastro didn't have anything to do with the unboiled water, because I continued to drink unboiled water throughout my time out there and had no issues. I suspect it was more likely to do with consuming some flax, which has a purgative effect.
Did it ever? 5 days, 5 days of gastro. I've got to say that watching you go through that, I was so impressed with your resilience. Now, if I spend 24 hours with gastro, I'm munted for a week. And you had 5 days, and then you got up and you moved your shelter. How much did the gastro knock you around, and what did it take to reach through that to be able to still not only stay there but do so with such badassery?
Mm. Oh, thanks, Gina. It was actually 8 days of gastro. I did say at one point, oh, that's 5 days of gastro. And then I got up and I walked around. I went on an explorative walk to follow some deer trail, and just it knocked me out again for another 3 days. So at the end of that period of time, I spent 3 days before I moved camp, and I found my next shelter site during that three-day period and actually erected the main pole so that when I did come to move camp, I could quickly put up my tarp and not be outside of my shelter, my first shelter and my second shelter, for more than a couple of hours actually. And it was really exhausting, but it was just exhausting. I just had to go very slowly, and that was also part of my overall strategy, was to move as slowly as possible through the landscape and just be relaxed and take in what was around me in a very conscious way.
While you're out there, you know, struggling through those days as you did, I mean, are you wondering how other participants are going, or are you just really kind of focused on what's happening in your bowels?
Up to episode 7, I haven't managed to find any insects, any live bait, even though I've got my trusty shovel. So I am wondering at that point, have other people got sites where there's more insects? And up until episode 7, I didn't get a bite for trout. I didn't see any trout. So I'm trying lots of different lures and no bites happening, lots of different times of day, at night, different sites. And I'm just thinking, have other people got more resources perhaps on their land?
Was your mind going over, well, that's okay because I'll be able to catch at least one fish, or, you know, there'll be lots of fish and it's just a matter of harvesting them? And then to find that you couldn't even find the insects or the live bait and you didn't see a fish, what did that do to your mindset?
It was really emotionally challenging not to be bringing in that protein. Like, it definitely was one of the harder things, especially in the beginning. Physically, it probably wasn't as challenging not having that protein as it was challenging emotionally.
In this episode, you tell us about your battle with breast cancer. And I'm really curious to sort of understand how you see resilience through the prism of your own experiences.
Resilience to me is a capacity or a skill that can be exercised in the same way that the body can be exercised. And I've had many opportunities in my life to practice resilience. Building my own house by myself over a 2-year period is probably the most challenging thing that I've experienced. And then dancing with death, you know, with that breast cancer, was really very intense. And at some point in that journey, I sort of made a shift and started to dance with life more. That's probably where my biggest sort of pushback and strength was in practicing resilience prior to the alone experience, I think.
What did it take for you to push back? What was the process that you went through from hearing you will die, XYZ, to actually this is how I need to be for me? What was that process for you?
I turned to nature. I went out into the forest here by myself. I sat each sunrise with sandstone against my back, sat naked, meditating with the sun on me for several hours each day. So stillness in nature. And I dropped down quite deep into my own knowing, or as I've heard you say, your own authority, your own sovereignty about oneself. And it was such a deep process that my dreams started to change. And I had a dream where I had chemotherapy and I was staggering down the passage afterwards, weeping. And when I woke from that dream, I knew for me that chemotherapy was not something that my psyche would accept. So, in fact, if I did that, I'd actually be diminishing my energy and my life force. Anyway, even if I went down an alternative treatment path, there were no guarantees that I would survive. And if I went down the chemo radiation path, no guarantees. Or if I used a bit of both, there were no guarantees. So I just had to go with that inner knowing of what was the right way forward for me. And I think I really brought that to the alone experience, really knowing how I wanted to experience my time out there in New Zealand alone.
This is a really beautiful example of the difference between knowledge and wisdom. So what I hear with you is wisdom. You have had this huge experience where you really took yourself to the edge of death and found what rightness was for you in navigating that. And so then when you got to alone, this is knowledge that is embedded in your very cells. So it's not like it's, oh, I've got a plan, or I'm going to be this way, or I'm going to have this attitude. This is something that experience changed you so much that it's impossible to be who you were before. And the wisdom of that attitude then permeates every second of your time in alone. And I think we see that. Like, I think we see that. I don't know about you, but I've been saying the whole time, like, you're a weapon. When it comes to resilience, it really shows.
She's not exaggerating. She has been singing your praises the whole time.
Yeah.
You've also spoke about how important John was to you when you had your John Rock and we met your John Rock. And I wanted to know, what was it about the rock that reminded you so much of John?
That rock was a mountain personified, and John's, the forging of who he is took place in the mountains. So he carries so much mountain energy with him, patience. And he was present with me the whole time that I was out there. He was thinking to me every hour of every day that I was out there. And I could feel that. It was palpable. I didn't feel alone out there. His presence was absolutely palpable. And I mean, that's such an advantage, isn't it? I think to have that connection to a significant other in your life in such a way that you don't actually feel alone when you're alone in the community of the forest, which is another point. The forest feels like a community to me. So I don't feel like I'm alone because the trees and the birds and the rocks and the water and the, you know, the air, the insects, they feel like part of my community. They feel nourishing. The old trees there, my goodness, the old trees in that place were so patient and strong and nourishing, and I just leaned into that. So I really didn't feel alone. Yeah.
How's it been watching everybody else's journeys on the show?
Oh, I've been so excited to see Tamika's journey in particular. I just love her. I just feel such a sense of sisterhood with her. So that's been absolutely delightful. And, you know, when she gets the fish and when Andreas gets the fish, I'm, oh, get it. You know, like, I'm so there for them. But watching my own journey, I feel like, oh, it's such a tiny part of what that journey was for me. And I would like to see more of my journey unfold, because the soft skills are so important. The psychological skills are so important to keep a person in that place. And they're just not as exciting as the, you know, the fish catch. And so I think it doesn't make such good TV.
I reckon we get to see your soft skills, like I said, like radiating through all of your decisions.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I can't wait to see where we see you go and what we can see you do after episode 7. At this point, what's motivating you to stay in this?
Two things are motivating me to stay. One is the $250,000, which it's a good motivator, good carrot. And the other is the knowing that the deeper I go into any challenging experience, the more personally rewarding it is. You know, the more personal development happens, insights come, you know, it just, suffering is a great teacher.
All right, Susan. So the next section of this interview, we have like a quick fire question round where we're going to throw questions at you and we ask that you just give us your sort of straight off the bat response, like bang, 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 bang. Are you ready?
I'll give it a go. Bang, 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 bang's not my superpower, but I'll give it a go.
No. All right. So question one, what was the best of your 10 items?
My sleeping bag, because it kept me warm. I didn't need to have a warm shelter. My sleeping bag.
Gastro or COVID?
Oh, gastro, definitely.
Which item would you swap out, if any?
None.
So, biggest lesson?
Biggest lesson, that my body is really well adapted to doing without calories, as is every other Homo sapien body on the planet. Yeah, part of our evolutionary experience. Wow. Very cool.
What was your biggest craving?
Oh, John, there you go. That just popped. There you go. And I didn't even think that or feel that when I was out there. But right now when you ask me, it's John.
One thing you'd tell yourself on day one?
Trust your instincts.
A good night's sleep or a good day's foraging?
A good day's foraging any day.
What did you miss most out there? And your answer can't be John.
Food, Vegemite, my forest at home, the land at home, the land that I've become embedded in where I live now, and Vegemite.
What would you tell someone applying for a loan?
Spend some time alone in the forest, in the desert, by an ocean, alone, no other humans, and see how that goes for you before applying. Maybe a week or two.
And lastly, would you do it again?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, women go back for a second bout of childbirth, don't they? So, yeah, I'm up for it.
Sure. Susan, look, thank you so much for making the time to talk to us and coming on the podcast. We really appreciate it. We appreciate you sharing your story with us through the series and through here. And I know that a lot of people will take a lot out of that.
Thanks so much, Darren.
And I just want to echo that your journey is inspiring for a lot of people. And I just want to say thank you for being a role model. It's really lovely to spend time with you.
Oh, thanks so much, Gina.
Ecologist and hiker Dr. Kate, she was one of the participants on Alone Australia Season 1, facing the long winter in Lutruwita, Tasmania, where you actually could eat the eels, unlike season 2. Kate, thank you so much for joining us from your home on Ngunnawal country in Canberra. Tell us, how's life been since Alone? I mean, has anything changed for you?
Yeah, I mean, everything's changed my entire life. I went back home to my beautiful family and back to my normal job. But, you know, you just have a new lens with which to see the world after an experience like that and pushing yourself and being in nature for that long. And, you know, lots of questions come up about why did I struggle with this or that? And it's just such an amazing learning experience and shows me in this gratitude for everything. And, you know, like the warm shower and a meal with friends and a cuddle and just those simple aspects of life that we take for granted in the everyday just get amplified.
Would you say that gratitude is one of your superpowers?
Look, I struggle with it sometimes. I think like all of us, we get a bit caught up in the hamster wheel of modern day life and achieving and doing and dishes and cleaning and, you know, all that stuff I get caught up with. And it is good to, you know, decouple from that and get back outdoors and remind myself of all those lessons that I learnt while I was out there.
Do you find when you're out and about, people still recognise you from season one?
Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't happen all the time. And I think people recognise you, but they're too scared to come up perhaps sometimes. Because I noticed I went to like this beer festival and like people were coming up left, right and centre and they're everywhere. And I was like, oh, I guess because they've had a couple of beers. They're like, oh, okay. Whereas, you know, when I'm in the supermarket, I just sort of get like a few like looks and I'm like, oh, is that just because I'm wearing my Uggies in public or is it because, oh, that's the eel eater. We had these amazing experiences of being alone and out there, but then through that experience, it's produced this amazing connection with the whole community, especially here in Canberra. Like, there's some real Canberra love and it just feels so beautiful.
Speaking of connecting with the community, you've got a really awesome YouTube channel which basically charts your hiking adventures. Have you picked up new audiences since your time on Alone?
Yeah, definitely. There's, I guess there's been a whole lot more interest in, you know, the show and who are these people. And, yeah, there's been a nice flood of, especially women, which is exciting to see following along. And I guess after Alone, I've realised the importance of helping break down barriers to getting into outdoor space. So, you know, a bit more content in terms of gear and skills and trying to nut that out so people feel confident and comfortable outdoors.
And with your channel, have you branched out at all? You know, has your content changed?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we got like a, you know, the crash course in filming and all that sort of stuff. So it has pushed me to do more and to try and develop that craft because it certainly is an art form. And yeah, I've got a little short adventure film coming out. I'm going to do a screening in a couple of months. So yeah, pretty excited for that one.
That's awesome. A hiking film.
Yeah, yeah. Just I went into this deep gorge over 5 days, did a solo hike and yeah, just sort of trying to tell a beautiful story there and share that place with the world.
You went into a deep gorge. Like you just say that. Oh, I just went into a deep gorge over 5 days. I mean, deep gorges flood when there's rain and there's boulders and it's kind of dangerous, isn't it? How do you manage all of that?
You know, there's like a lot. There's so skills with Alone. It's like, you know, being prepared. So like I study the wazoo out of where I'm going, my gear, and then, you know, taking the right safety equipment and working through those issues when you're in there. Like, you know, I remember day two, I'm like, this is my last exit. I'm in it now and sort of trying to settle those nerves and just be comfortable with where I am and embrace it and realize, okay, yeah, I'm safe. Let's keep going and try and quieten any of those nagging thoughts that aren't helpful.
Were there any hairy moments?
You know, there's always a few, certainly on like slippery rocks and boulders with a backpack and sort of, you know, you get a bit of a fall. And I think the first day I had a couple of pretty decent falls. Luckily, you know, didn't hurt anything, just took a bit of bark off.
You are so tough.
You know. but it does unnerve you a bit when, you know, you're sort of like, oh, you know, I don't want to be calling a chopper to come and get me out of here. I want to get out under my own steam. And there's a few nervous moments, but just sort of trying to tell yourself, especially when you're tired, you know, at the end of the day, you're tired and you're making silly decisions. Like, hang on, let's make the sensible, slow decision here instead of just jumping off this rock into the water.
Yeah, good.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah.
Yep, smart.
Understandable.
Yeah. Kate, we're up to episode 7 now of season 2.
Yes.
It's really starting to heat up. Ooh. What are your thoughts on the season so far?
Well, I mean, I'm loving it. I'm very jealous of the location, minus the sandflies. Watching Rick on episode 1 just like laying on the beach with a fire or something, I'm like, what
the heck?
He can sit on the ground
but
without...
But they have sandflies, and that's the thing. Yeah. No matter how beautiful it is, those midges, oh, my goodness, I don't... Because we didn't have any bugs, did we? Well, no. I didn't.
that was part that scared the shit out of me. I was like... What part of Tasmania have you never been attacked by leeches? Like, come on.
Even the
that
leeches
freaked me
aren't
out.
Here.
Mm. Yeah. Mm. But yeah, I don't know how I'd go with those sandflies. They do not look like much fun. Mm-mm.
No. With the participants, how engaged are you? What do you reckon?
Oh, I'm loving watching their journey. You know, each and every person has their unique, you know, spin on it. I just love the different approaches. I'm loving actually listening to the podcast because, you know, there's certain people that perhaps I haven't warmed to that much, but then I hear them on the podcast and I'm like, oh, I love the way he's talking about this or this or this. So I'm loving that added element of, you know, Alone content. Yeah. Yeah.
Thank
well
you.
Done. Well done, you guys. But I have to say at the start of this episode, episode 7, is it? I was gagging for Tamika with fish eating. I was like.
Yeah, actually, her gag and your gag looked very similar. Your eel gag and her fish gag looked pretty much the same.
I was gagging on the couch watching her do that.
Well, speaking of Tamika, she was kind of struggling with whether or not to hunt game, and you decided not to hunt native animals in Tassie. I mean, how are you relating to her?
Yeah, I completely get it. I think... You go in gung-ho, like you don't sign up for Alone thinking, oh, yeah, I'll stay 2 days and go home. But once you get out there, there's this weird nature force that hits you and you're just like, ah, the game plan goes, phew, you know, it's hard to describe.
Did you have a plan when you went in?
I mean, I never intended to hunt animals. I'm like, mammals and stuff. But I think in boot camp, there's that weird competitiveness that was, you know, around some of us. And I got a bit swept up in that. And I was like, oh, yeah, no, I probably could. But then as soon as I got out there, poof, you know, you're just all that bullshit washes away and you're like, no, that's not who I am. I think it's that authentic self you find when you're out there, hey?
So eels. I can't even say eels to you with a straight
face. Love eels.
I loved eels. You know what? Watching the way everybody else cooked the eels when I was watching it back, I was just gobsmacked that, A, you did what you did, because that has to be the most disgusting way to prepare and eat eels. And then even Mike skinning them. So what I was doing is I was like cutting them up and frying them.
With the skin on.
With the skin on and frying them, because all the oil came out and then made this little pool, and then they deep fried. So it was like eating Karaji chicken with my salt. And so I've come out going, eels are great. And then watching you, honestly, I nearly peed my pants watching you. So watching you. And if you're listening to this podcast and you haven't seen Alone Season 1, do yourself a favour and get to the part where Kate eats eel for the first time.
But in all seriousness, I mean, it's hugely consequential vomiting out there, right? I mean, you're losing bodily fluids. Like, that's absolutely a really bad thing.
Plus whatever it is you just ate. I had a point where I ate an eel and I ate the whole thing all at once, and I spent about 3 hours trying not to vomit, and this didn't make it. But I said to the camera, you know what? I am like a dog right now. I would eat my own vomit. Yeah. If I puke this back up, I've finally got an eel. Mm. If I puke this back up, I would eat it. Would you? Would you have?
That's what I said to myself. With my bucket there, I'm like, if you vomit this, you're putting it in the bucket and you're eating it. And I was like,
that'd make good TV.
Lovely telly. I mean, honestly, like, it did taste good. Like, parts of it, like, you know, that torso of the eel was actually quite nice. Like, as you said, chicken. But I think it's just that intense oiliness was what was freaking me out. I'm just so squidgy about fish as well. Like, even just watching Tamika, I was gagging. Like,
And what did you think about the seeing that they can't eat eels in Aotearoa?
I got a good chuckle out of that, actually.
And they're huge too.
Oh, stonkers.
It would be so hard, you know, getting that excitement when you get something on the hook and that disappointment. Like, seeing, was it Christoph last night? I was like, ooh.
Yeah, that hurts.
That would be hard.
That really hurts.
And also you wonder, like, with hooks, because you'd be losing a few hooks through that method too, so that would be hard.
How do you see this season playing out? Like, get the crystal ball out.
I mean, I've got a couple of fan favourites for myself, I guess. You know, obviously I'm always pro a woman winning because that's cool, but really like Rick. Yeah, really like Tamika. Super excited to see more of Susan. Her, like, poor personality's been, like, squashed by the gastro or whatever it was.
But what a trooper.
And then, like, hearing some more of her story last night, you're like, oh, this chick is tough.
She is. You're one of the very few people who've actually been through this experience. What would you be saying to the participants as they tap out?
Well done. Well done. Mm. You know, like, it was almost like a vertigo, I guess, I got in the lead up to season two, coming out of, like, reliving that, you know, getting on that aeroplane to fly to boot camp, putting yourself out there like that in that environment, those 10 days in boot camp of, like, meeting people and learning and thinking, like, what the hell am I here for? And then that day, like, that drop day, like, just reliving all those steps. And it's like, how did I even do that? Mm. Like, that in itself, to get dropped off, I think takes crazy. Yeah, I don't even know how I did it. Don't know.
Well, Dr. Kate, thank you so much for joining us. It was great to see you on season one, and I look forward to seeing so much more of your content on your YouTube channel going forward.
Thanks for having me.
And you never know. I reckon we should go out and do a walk sometime. Next time you're doing a 5-day canyoning, give me a call.
Absolutely.
It would be hilarious.
Teach me how to cook some eel.
You're on. I will.
No,
no, no. We will catch an eel and I will cook it for you, and I can guarantee you that you will enjoy it.
Let's do it.
Thanks for joining us on this podcast. If you'd like to get in touch, email alonepodcast@sbs.com.au and use the hashtag AloneAustralia on socials. Follow us on your podcast app to catch all the upcoming episodes when they drop, and we'll see you after the next episode. This series is produced by SBS Audio. That's Caroline Gates, Max Gosford, Joel Supple, Karen Okuda and Jung Cheng Ko. A huge thanks also to Joseph Maxwell, Alone Australia's executive producer, Rima Daya, and, of course, all the participants.